This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities and Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 15th day of January 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, we'll hear all about the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass at Agrible from right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus. Agrible, of course, is in Research Park. And along the way, we'll take a look at the Arc County payment. What you might be able to expect and when you can figure those out. I can give you a hint. It'll be next month, but not this month. And even then, it'll still be just an estimate for the 2015 crop year. And we'll also take a look at the agricultural news for the afternoon on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Of course, let's take a look at the numbers as they finished up in Chicago. Corn futures nearby March contract at 363 and a quarter, up 5 1/4 for the day. May contract at 367 and a half, 4 3/4 higher. July at 372 and 3/4, up 4 1/2. And September at 377 and a half, 3 1/2 higher. December corn 385 and a quarter, up 3 1/4. Soy complex March contract down 3 1/4, 879 in the bean pit. May futures at 878 and 3/4, down 4 1/4. July at 883 3/4, 4 1/2 lower in the August, down 4 1/4 at 885 1/2. November beans at $8.85 1/4, a nickel lower. Bean meal March contract down $3.50 at 270.70. And the bean oil for the day at 29.65, a dime lower. Wheat futures nearby, 473 3/4, up 5 cents. July at 484 1/2, the harvest month, 4 higher. Kansas City hard red winter wheat, July at 493 1/2. Up 5 1/4 cents on the afternoon. The numbers as they are looking at us from the livestock for the day are trading the contract for cattle at 127.57 1/2. They're down $2.97 1/2. January feeders at 154.30 are $4.50 lower. That's locked down the limit, the expanded limit. Lean hogs in the February contract at $62 are down 35 cents at this hour. 400 pounds. The April are 42 1/2 lower at $67.35. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Let's take a look at some of the outside markets at this hour. The energies are currently trading ethanol at $1.35 3/10. That's up 2 8/10 of a cent. Crude oil in the February contract at $29.57 is down $1.64 a barrel. Gasoline on the wholesale price at $1.02 6/10 of a cent is 4 1/10 of a cent lower for the day. And diesel fuel or heating oil is down 4 cents. That's at 94 cents even. Natural gas at $2.10 1/4 of a cent, down 3 7/10 of a cent. Outside markets show the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 15,928, down 353. And the U.S. dollar at 99.015 is down 0.14 on the day. Gold futures on the afternoon at $1,089.25 are up $15.75 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the Urbana-Champaign, or rather from the National Weather Service. For Urbana-Champaign, cloudy skies, a high of 45 degrees today. Winds out of the west at 15 to 18. They'll gust all the way to 26. Tonight, cloudy, a low of 23. West-northwest winds at 14 to 17 this evening. And then for tomorrow, Saturday, mostly cloudy skies, and we'll see a high of just 28 degrees. West-northwest winds at 10 to 14, gusting to 20 miles an hour. Saturday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 12. Wind chills between 1 and 6 above. West-northwest winds at around 10 miles an hour, and on Sunday, a 30% chance of snow before noon and partly sunny skies. More on the weather at the bottom of the half hour.
Support comes from Country Financial, now through March hosting information sessions for farmers throughout the state of Illinois. Topics include updates to both the federal crop insurance program and the Farm Bill. And at most locations, how to use grain marketing and crop insurance together to manage risk. More information is at countrycrop.com.
You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzulo joins us. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Nice to be back with you, Todd.
Well, how far did you make it across the state of Illinois and then Missouri?
I am actually crossing the Missouri River and back in Atchison as we speak.
Oh, excellent. Well, you're almost home, so just be patient, and we'll have you there in just a bit. So I know you.
Oh, take your time. Take your time. The Mississippi River, by the way, was very, very empty when I crossed it at Hannibal. Not very many barges at all, although the Illinois did have all the barges cleaned up when I came east the first of the week. There was a barge about every, 300 yards or something like that, and there was about a dozen stacked up there across that 72 bridge. So they were really backed up on the high water, but that's all cleared up at this point.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if you've been watching basis, what this really means for that across the whole of the Midwest and where the hottest bases are, because they really jumped after the USDA reports this week.
Yeah, you know, I think I'll pick it up from where Ellen Dearden left it off on the commodity week. I thought she had some really germane points about how hand-to-mouth buying the commercials had gotten, because the trade as a whole, commercials and traders alike, were expecting, for the most part, a bigger supply when it came to the corn especially and the beans. And I think, quite frankly, Todd, you probably had more cash flow selling done in the soybeans versus the corn. And so the corn is a little bit more of an empty pipeline. And so when that USDA report came out and we flushed the crude oil market again this week, but the corn didn't want to break with that crude oil market, I think the commercials, rightfully so, picked it up a bit here. And I was noticing in the part of the country that I was in earlier this week where there's a lot of livestock and a lot of ethanol, they are battling each other back and forth for the same corn. And this isn't a corn-deprived area because of the yields, like we talked about this morning, but I think generally speaking, that's going on all across the Corn Belt, where the industrial and the feed side is extremely strong right now. It's that export market that has really come in and kept a clamp on the prices.
All right. So when we have the strong basis levels, should producers be thinking about locking in basis for either corn and soybeans?
Yeah, I think in corn especially, but I think, quite frankly, a lot of them already have, because me and I think a bunch of other the analysts have talked about, and I think rightfully so, the idea of getting that good basis locked in and then waiting for the futures market. And unfortunately, the futures market has taken another leg down since the first of the year, or gone back down that long-term trend line or channel of 345 area with the crude oil market. But I'm in the camp right now, Todd, that I think we could get to 385 in March corn, because that's where we were a year ago, and we've only got about 70 million more bushels, and USDA's got a feed and residual number that's way too low. It's not hardly any different than what it was last year for the marketing year, but we're going to have about 3% more meat production in the United States in this marketing year. So I feel like that 385 is an attainable price level in March futures, and I would be looking at that as soon as we got a decent low established in the crude oil market. It doesn't matter whether you're in the stock market or in the energy market or in the corn market. Everybody's talking crude at this point.
Yeah, speaking of which, crude oil down to a low today so far of 29.13. So that's a new contract low. Don't know where to go from here. I know during our Commodity Week program, which most of the folks, if they stay with us for the whole hour, will hear a portion of in the second half hour of this hour-long program, and you're on that, you talked about hearing some people discussing $10 a barrel crude oil. I can't imagine that would be the case, but you probably have a better feel than I.
Well, private banks, you know, some of the bigger banks like Morgan Stanley and then some of the private analytical banks like Macquarie Group came out this week, both of them, and joined Goldman Sachs and the kind of the siren call or the clarion call that this is not done going down. And they've been right in the short term, but I think the research that I've done and the research that I'm presenting at these seminars has been, this is very similar to 1986. And in that, the World Bank came out last week in a big report and said, we've not seen three consecutive years of lower growth in emerging markets like China since the mid-1980s. And so I went back and looked in the mid-80s, and I actually found a Time magazine article and cover that on the cover it said, the good news, cheap oil prices, the bad news, cheap oil prices. And then up on the clover leaf, or not clover leaf, up on the dog leaf ear, they had a little extra story that said how the West can win the war on terrorism. And so almost 30 years to the day, within 2 months of being 30 years to the day, we're dealing with the exact same problems. And back then it was a supply issue as well. And what happened in that time period is we had a very strong move back up as we got into the later part of the first quarter of 1986. And I could see a very similar pattern developing here where we're getting a lot, you know, very, very large numbers of people saying it's going lower, it's going lower, it's going lower. And maybe it does, but by the same token, there that means less and less reason for it to go lower and more reason for it to bounce on any good news. Iran here over the weekend is supposed to be released from their issues that we had with them with their missiles and with their nuclear test. And so now they're supposed to be able to freely export oil, and the market was pricing some of that in. Be interesting to see what it looks like when we come back next week.
Yeah, so is this really the 800-pound gorilla in the marketplace, and could it push the rest of commodities lower even than they are at this point?
I don't think it can anymore like it was doing at one point, Todd. But to answer your first question, or the half of the question, is yes, it is the 800-pound gorilla, because at the last look I gave it, the crude oil dollar relationship had a negative 94% correlation on an 18-month basis. And so you're literally moving almost one-to-one opposite one another. And so if the crude oil goes down, the dollar gets bought, and vice versa. Now, what we saw this week was pretty amazing, in my opinion, because we actually got within a quarter penny, I think, of testing the high from the report day in March corn, and the chart looks extremely good. And this is given the crude oil price and what you said about the new contract low and a new 12 to 13 year low, and also given the fact that the equities are now for 2016, for how long we've been in 2016, they're dealing with the worst year ever in stock market history as far as percentage losses. And so we are starting to see, I think, that asset allocation shift, and I think we're starting to see the ag sector hold up better because, quite frankly, the volume of ag exports is really strong in the United States, and the volume of ag imports going into China is still better than it was a year ago by quite a bit.
I made note from the USDA reports, and I think you did too, of course, that on the global front, stocks have been declining as opposed to building for corn, soybeans, and wheat this time around.
Yeah, and this is the 2016 story, I think. If we don't have a financial crisis, I mean, if you had to pin me down and say what was the worst thing that China did in 2015 that we're still feeling the effects of, they mismanaged their currency. They weakened it dramatically in August, and then they did it again in November to get into that basket of currencies with the IMF. And by doing that, it gave the financial markets a lot of fits that the Chinese were weakening their currency because of their economy, not because they wanted to get into that IMF basket of currencies. And we're still feeling the repercussions of that. But the net is even with that weaker currency, they're still buying more. And that's, I think, a very good piece of news. And then if you get on top of that, a weather event, whereas 2015, the sentiment was El Nino, let's sell rallies because El Nino is good for the Northern Hemisphere. We don't really care about the Southern Hemisphere right now. If we got to 2016 where a La Nina developed, then I think you'd take away that negative bearish sentiment to sell rallies because your weather's flipped. So I see quite a bit of differences in 16 versus 15, and obviously the crude oil is right in the middle of that.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. Anything to add on the livestock? Because they've had a tough couple of days.
They have. You've got a technical gap, you know, that we needed to get filled as the January expired this week. You also had the unwinding of the feeder corn spread where they were buying corn back and selling feeders out. And then you saw the boxed beef prices not hold up at the end of the week. I would say, if I had to guess, driving down the road, looking at stuff at night, I would say more than half of what we saw this week is more fund and technically related, not cash fundamentals. So I think that if we got another cold wave in the central part of the country where most of the feedlots are, and that cold wave sat on us instead of moving out, I think you'd start to see a lot different price action in the cash, and that'd give the futures a little bit better look.
You have a great weekend there in Atchison.
Thanks, Todd. You have a great one there, and Muhammad as well.
Okay, thanks so much. That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Joins us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Don't forget, you can find us online at WILLAG.org. And if you're interested just to see what it might be like to have some acreage that could go organic because, well, it makes money. And I think the best one to listen to of the five interviews that are up on that site right now, and they're all in order, is the one with the banker from Flanagan Steak Bank out of Gridley, Illinois, because he gives some numbers that just might amaze you. It's a tough job, but might be interesting to consider as we're looking for ways to save some money on the farm, save some money on the inputs, and possibly find profitable alternatives to produce grains and oil seeds in the United States. So you can visit that online at willag.org, WILLAG.org. In today's agricultural news, congressional opponents of the Environmental Protection Agency's Waters of the U.S. rule, or WOTUS, stressed in flood debate the need to halt the government's ever-increasing set of rules and regulations. The House approved the Senate measure this week. Speaking on the House floor, Pennsylvania Republican and House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee Chair Bill Schuster says the rule would be costly to farmers and small business owners.
Every day I hear from farmers, home builders, small businesses, and others in my district, and some have told me, some farmers have said, they won't be able to pass on their family farm because of the cost associated with this power grab. And as I said, I have no doubt that's what's going to happen. This will continue to expand if we don't stop it here today.
Schuster pointed out that the president argued in his State of the Union speech for eliminating rules on the books, but needs to avoid putting on so many rules. President Obama will veto the just-passed anti-WOTUS bill, by the way. Louisiana Representative Garrett Graves predicts the courts will ultimately say no to WOTUS, as the agency expanded rather than limited the definition of navigable waters in the Clean Water Act.
What's going to happen is this rule is once again going to be thrown out by the Supreme Court. It's once again going to be thrown out. But what Americans are going to face between now and when this is thrown out is they're going to be facing additional scrutiny. They're going to be facing additional cost of compliance. They're going to face additional encroachment or infringement upon their private property rights.
The federal courts have blocked WOTUS from taking effect for now. The injunction could be lifted as the case proceeds through the court system. Elsewhere, merger talks continue for Swiss-based Syngenta and China's state-owned ChemChina and U.S.-based Monsanto. Interim CEO Mike DeMar told Reuters, "We're at a stage where we're looking at different combinations," adding that becoming a Chinese company is just one of several options on the table. He says everybody has spoken to each other as industry companies are trudging through lower sales on lower farm income. ChemChina is seeking a loan package by Western banks to fund a possible Syngenta takeover that could later be refinanced by Chinese banks. A takeover of Syngenta by ChemChina would underpin an effort by the Chinese government to boost farming productivity, according to Reuters. And speaking of China, China may further reduce import demand and domestic prices with a drawdown of the country's large cotton stockpile. Agweek reports the government is considering selling some of its stockpile, estimated at around 11 million tons of cotton. And finally today, a bit on crude oil. Plummeting crude oil prices are causing concern in some unlikely places. As crude dipped under $30 a barrel, the ethanol industry has begun to worry about the impact on its sales. USDA chief economist Rob Johansson says it takes away one of ethanol's big selling points.
As the price for crude oil comes down, that makes biofuels less attractive as an alternative.
In fact, ethanol futures are selling for 25 cents a gallon more than gasoline. Johansson says the low oil price also impacts the ethanol industry push for blending more than the renewable fuel standard of 10% into gasoline.
It'll just make it more difficult to blend higher than E10. So E85, E15 will be harder to blend.
With a government mandate in place, Johansson says he sees no plans for ethanol plants to cut production. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Farmers and their bankers can get a jump on just how much income to expect from the Arc County program next fall. I'll have more in a moment on how Nass County yields can be used to anticipate the payments. Well, farm income is down dramatically. It means farmers will be going to bankers for production loans this winter. And those loans will be used to plant next season's crop. The bankers will be looking for every clue they can find to help them make solid lending decisions. One source of income they'll want to calculate comes from the farm programs. However, the Arc County payments won't be figured until the fall. It is possible to estimate these payments by substituting Nass County yields for the FSA computed yields, says University of Illinois agricultural economist Gary Schnittke.
So 2015 payments, Arc County payments, there's likely to be payments, but it's going to depend on what those yield levels are, those county yields, and FSA calculates those yields, but they won't release those yields until next autumn of 2016. But we can use Nass yields to come up with a pretty good estimate of what those FSA county yields are. And Nass will release its yields in February of this year. So in February, we'll have a pretty good feel for what those Arc County payments are, because we'll have a pretty good idea of what county yields look like.
Nass county yields do vary from the FSA numbers, but not by much. Nass calculates yields by dividing production by harvested acreage. These are both numbers the agency collects via a statistical estimate. FSA uses a different calculation, says Schnittke.
FSA does the same thing when Nass data exists, but it adds to acres RMA failed acres. So FSA yields will always be less than Nass yields.
Again, because FSA adds failed acres into the calculation, the resulting yields are less than the Nass County yield averages. It means the Nass County yields, again, those will be released in February, will provide a conservative estimate of our county payments.
If they use the Nass yield, they'll be most likely underestimating the payment, because usually FSA yields are a bit lower than Nass yields, and it depends on the number of failed acres.
Again, FSA yields are lower than Nass County yields because production is divided by harvested and failed acres, not just the harvested acreage figure used by Nass. There's an Illinois state map of the average county difference on the Farm Doc Daily website. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Well, let's take a look now at what's happening in the marketplace again for the afternoon. And we'll check in on the livestock as they finished up trading. February contract down 297 and a half at 127, 57 and a half. January feeders at 154.30, finished the limit lower at 450. And February contract and hogs down 35 cents at $62 on this Friday afternoon. Recapping what happened in the grains floor, corn futures were up 3 to 5 cents, soybeans were down 3 to 5 cents, and wheat futures for the day were up about a nickel in both the hard red and the soft red. Outside markets, again, the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 15,851 is down 430 points at this hour. The U.S. dollar down 0.245 at 98.91, and the gold futures on the day at $1,089.25 are up $15.75. The weather forecast for this evening says cloudy skies, a low of 23, tomorrow a high of 28, and cloudy as well. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. More on the weather when I return in just 2 minutes.
Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
It's National Strawberry Ice Cream Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1785, William Prout was born. An English chemist, he was the first to classify food components into three divisions: carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. In 1863, wood pulp paper was first used in the U.S. for a printed newspaper by the Boston Morning Herald of Boston, Massachusetts. It was a four-page, eight-column newspaper that sold for 3 cents a copy. In 1889, a patent was issued to Daniel Johnson of Kansas City for a rotary dining table for use on ships. The table and attached chairs rotated so that everyone could be served from one spot. In 1919, the Great Molasses Flood occurred. A large 50-foot-high storage tank in Boston burst and sent a tidal wave of over 2 million gallons of molasses traveling at over 30 miles per hour across the city. Houses, buildings, and parts of the elevated rail system were crushed in its path. 21 people died, and over 150 were injured. It took over 6 months to clean up the mess, and the damage was in the millions of dollars. And in 1990, Campbell's Soup produced its 20 billionth can of tomato soup. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Friday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined now by AgriBull's Eric Snodgrass to take a look at the weather forecast. Hey, it's January, and for the first time in a really long time, we have a hurricane that is making its way through the Atlantic. That's kind of unusual.
It is very unusual. Last time this happened was 1938. In addition to that, this hurricane is forming very far north, you know, that usually don't form really much outside of the tropics. And this one is way far north. And so it's been fun, actually, to watch this one take off. And maybe it's a sign of things to come for the next hurricane season. We're going to have to watch this next hurricane season very close. But Alex is certainly an oddity.
So let's talk a little bit about other kinds of things that have been happening across the Midwest. Speaking of oddities, they were really dry on the West Coast. But now they've been getting a lot of rainfall, and even snowpack's pretty good, I think.
Oh, snowpack is fantastic. Last year at this time, you know, if you kind of look at the percent of normal snowpack for most of the mountains out west, it was bad. It was just low. But they've had very persistent flow from the west, loading those mountains up with snow, which is going to be fantastic for ag out west as they recover from, you know, the historic drought that they're in. So, yeah, this is good news for them that they're getting all this snow and all this rain, helping California out quite a bit, too.
I'd like to hopscotch around the United States. Can you check in on the southeast for me? They'll be coming into spring sooner rather than later, and despite the fact that it's January.
Yeah, no, the southeast has had several rounds of heavy rain over the past, you know, maybe as far back as 60 days or so, and they're getting pounded again today. About now, you know, the rain is moving on up the east coast, but nasty line of storms that moved through earlier today, and we're looking at them getting hit a few more times in the upcoming like 10 days or so, so got to be on the lookout for flooding down there.
The word of the marketing year for weather has been El Nino. What's it look like today?
Yeah, El Nino is actually probably past its peak. So we've been watching it build for the last 9 months or so. It's now past its peak. And as we've been forecasting, we're heading back toward what we call ENSO neutral, which is, you know, normal conditions across the Pacific. And then a lot more seriously into La Nina conditions for late next summer into fall and winter. So we got to be on the lookout for the transition from El Nino to La Nina.
And before we go to South America, let's finish up the United States in the Midwest. Rainfall here or cold conditions? We've had both this winter.
That's right, yeah. And there's some rain that's moving across the Ohio Valley right now. It's moving on off to the east. And thankfully, we didn't get snow out of this one. But boy, it is the cold air that is coming in behind this that we got to be on the lookout for. We're talking single-digit lows in the morning to start off next week, possibly even below zero. So that's not below freezing, that's below zero for some of the morning temperatures across the Corn Belt. We got a chance for some snow, a little bit of snow maybe on Sunday in parts of Illinois, but really, I'd say the next best chance for snow across the Midwest comes on a weak little clipper system that tries to get through here on Wednesday. So we'll keep an eye out on that one.
And finally, your assessment of the crops in the state of Mato Grosso in Brazil.
Yeah, so we've been talking about how they've been anomalously dry, and it's impacting some of the crop in the northern part of Mato Grosso. You know, we're getting pretty late in the season. It's about harvest time there, and so it's even though the rains have picked up recently, it's a little bit too late for it to make a big impact. So there, I've heard some reports that about 30% of the crop has been rated as poor. And to keep that in perspective, about 30% of all of the beans that come out of Brazil come from Mato Grosso. So it's a significant chunk, but I think other parts of the country are going to carry some of that burden. And we're still going to expect, you know, in terms of production, a big year out of Brazil.
Eric Snodgrass is with AgriBull. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason.